Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun Men About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this journey of all things fermenting.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here at HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, so let's do some shout-outs and announcements. First of all, we had an absolutely fantastic time at Summer Solstice 2. So a huge thanks to Chris Kuzmi,
Josh Bernstein, and Tyson Ho.
God, and everyone else that helped. So it was a great event at Arrogant Swine in Bushwick in the backyard and also inside. Two whole hogs. 25 plus homebrew and pro brews.
Yeah.
And a lot of really good
delicious
folks.
Session beers. Delicious.
Yes.
Big flavor, low alcohol.
Everything 5% and under.
Yeah.
So it was great. It was a perfect day, too. It was like 71 and, you know, overcast and maybe a little bit of drizzle, so not too hot. Nobody got sunburned this year.
What we're saying is we totally wish you were there. Come next year. Every summer solstice will be there.
It's just cool to see the New York City, you know, pro brewing and home brewing community come together.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Announcement coming up.
Speaking of pro brewing and home brewing coming together.
So this weekend, this Saturday, is the NYC Brewers Pro-Am in Brooklyn. So it's going to be at Covenhoven, which is a fantastic bar in Prospect Heights neighborhood of Brooklyn. John LaPaula and Robert Sherrill are co-producing this event. They've basically chosen, randomly out of a hat apparently, five local home brewers and paired them up with five New York pro brewers. So each of the homebrew and pro brewers got together and did a collaboration beer, and they will be bringing that as well as one beer from the homebrewer and one beer from the pro brewer. So your ticket gets you 15 beers as well as a pretzel and just an amazing time in Covenhoven's backyard.
There are two sessions.
Yep. Two sessions. The first is from 1 to 3, and the second is from 3:30 to 5:30. Kuzme and I will be at the 1 to 3 session. We hope to see you there.
That's right. And you know what? You know what else? That's actually very close to Greenpoint Beer Works, where I've kind of picked up some shifts and doing some stuff, and we'll have our tasting room open that afternoon. I'm going straight from the first session over there, and I'll be slinging in beer, Heartland, Kelso, Greenpoint Beer Works beers. I'm very excited about it. Very beautiful bar. It's going to be pretty fun.
It's true. It's pretty hip. That's right around the corner from Hobbs Hill. So
that's right.
It'd be a whole crawl kind of day.
That's right. See you Saturday.
And totally walkable. All right. So after work, I joined up with Chris and our very special guest.
Our new friend, Ben Middlemiss from New Zealand.
Yeah, all the way from New Zealand. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you very much, guys. It's great to be here.
I have a question. Is Ben your real name?
I have to be honest and say no. It's a long story. I was originally Steve.
You were originally Steve.
And how did you get Ben? Because this is a good story.
Well, when I was at high school, when I started brewing...
Brewing in high school?
Yeah, in 1968.
In 1968.
Those crazy New Zealanders.
Yeah. And, it was because my mother and father were getting a bit nervous about my hobby of making explosives. So I was blowing too many things up, and they thought they looked more favorably upon making beer. And, I started brewing there, and I brewed a beer called Ben's Best Bitter, and it was from an old English recipe by a guy called Ben Turner. And I made some labels up with Ben's Best Bitter on the label. And my good friend Jules, I went to high school with, was entrepreneurial sort of marketing and selling the beer and telling people that the brewer is just over there. That's the guy who made this beer. And they said, "Is that Ben?" And he said, "Yes." And I had to play along so I would get the sales, finance the next batch. And so the name stuck. My mother was a bit disconcerted, but I told her it was a passing phase. But that's about 46 years ago. So
so now you've taken on the name Ben, except for your older brother.
Yeah, two brothers older than me, one younger, and they call me, my eldest calls me Ben, and the other two guys, Paul and Chris, they call me Steve. So I'm the only one that never gets confused.
That's pretty significant, though. 1968, in New Zealand, homebrewing, despite the age, what was the homebrewing scene like in New Zealand in 1968?
Well, to be quite frank, it was pretty terrifying. I suddenly grew very quickly to realize why the homebrew stigma, as it has been around for so long, people sort of screw their noses up and used to think, oh, yes, homebrew, and they had awful memories of it. And I can understand why, because there were a lot of guys making beer there during the war when they didn't have the right ingredients and they're using raisins and all sorts of things to make the fermentation in the bottle to give some carbonation. And some of those things, now raisins can carry lots of other things on them, and most of those beers didn't turn out so well. And there's a story of people dropping soap accidentally into the brews and all sorts of things, which they're using old coppers where they used to boil clothes and to wash them.
Oh, wow.
And they became a handy thing to make beer, but they forgot to remove some of the things like that. It was a bit of an oversight. But, yeah.
And you said also at that time there wasn't a whole lot of sanitizing chemicals, or at least what you used by way of standard homebrew.
No, there wasn't. We couldn't get those sorts of things we take for granted today. So my mother was a keen baker, and she would come into the kitchen, get a bit annoyed because I'd taken over the kitchen. And when she opened the oven to get it ready to do some baking, she found there was no room left because I had about 100 bottles all stacked sideways, and heating them up to a high temperature to sterilize them, because I'd washed them previously, and I used the oven to create the heat to sterilize them to make them ready for bottling beer.
Ben's Best Bitter was based on a recipe that was in Ben Turner's book?
Yes, Ben Turner. Exactly, yes. He was a famous guy called, it was just basically his titles came out with either Ben Turner on the cover or BCA Turner, as he was sometimes known. And he provided lots of insight to brewing mead, beer, and wine. But my primary interest was beer. I had made some wine, but that took too long and got too many friends to come around and drink it all, and then you had to wait so long to make the next batch. So beer became the challenge, and it really was huge, because I suddenly realized that the big breweries had all the knowledge and no one else had it, and the big breweries were never going to let that knowledge out of their grasp. So it became a challenge for me to learn how to make a quality product, because I believed it was achievable at home if you had the right ingredients and the right knowledge.
Do you still make Ben's Best Bitter?
To be honest, I haven't made it for a little while, but I have intended making it, and I will be making it again soon. I haven't made it for about 15 years.
Mm-hmm. But that started a lifelong journey, this thing, and that's ultimately how we met you. We have only met you. We met you Saturday. We met you after the Arrogant Swine event that we just spoke about. You came from the Mermaid Parade. Not you weren't in the Mermaid Parade, although
no.
I think it would have been fun.
I don't look good in bikini.
So just the backstory, the Mermaid Parade is a big deal here. It's at Coney Island, Brooklyn. It's a crazy celebration of all things mermaid and from the sea and...
what I did notice though that a lot of the mermaids didn't seem to have any. It seems to be different here, that you don't have to have necessarily a top to your
toplessness
outfit.
Is totally legal in New York City.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yep,
I tried not to look most of the times. I looked between spread fingers.
But the Mermaid Bread is a big. So that's one of the classic New York City events. Yeah, I would say definitely like old, you know, Coney Island, Brooklyn, hardcore. You know, New York fun.
Exactly, and it was my first trip to Coney Island. I loved it. I mean, although I didn't have a Coney Island hot dog, I regret that. But
it's a mob scene. That's
Oh, it was incredible, and it was everyone. All the families were there. The kids from the tiniest to the oldest. Everyone was having a ball, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, actually. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a great event. And then you went to Owl Farm. So Owl Farm is a local great craft beer bar in South Park Slope.
Their third anniversary, yep. And had a great big party on Saturday, and we got to meet everybody. You guys came through, and Ben Middlemiss is the name of your brewery. And you're currently distributed through Shelton Brothers.
That's
in the United States.
Yes.
And Bob and BR brought you to us through that.
And Joel.
And Joel, yeah, yep. Joel. Yes. Trombone playing beer slinger.
Joel's a cool guy, you know. I mean, I like the Shelton Brothers, and they're all very interesting people, and especially, I mean, Joel with his music too, and I love the fact he's a really cool bass player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to ask, how did you get from homebrewing in 1968 to, you know, having your own brewing company?
Well, I continued to make beer because I've always had a passion for it, and I moved to Australia back in about 1980, and I stayed there till 1992. But while I was there, I met this Australian guy called Graham Howard, who built this incredible, like a German brew house brewery in Brisbane, and I was down there every day watching its progress, tasting the beer. It completely hooked me so much that I thought, I've got to just do this, because I can't believe there's so much fun seeing someone having so much fun making a product that ultimately he's so passionate about it, but ultimately the public were enjoying it, and seeing the reaction to it makes the whole thing worthwhile, you know. And to me, creating and seeing it through to the end and watching people enjoying and really getting into it was just the best thing I've seen in a long time.
And so what happened? So you moved back to New Zealand.
Yes. My mother sent me a telegram. My hometown I came from, these guys were building a new brewery that hadn't, the first one in Blenheim since World War II. And Blenheim is a little town northeast corner of the South Island of New Zealand, and they decided to build this little brewery, and I decided I could go and run it for them. And so they didn't know who I was, but I approached them, I wrote to them and said, hey, look, let me come and run your brewery. I've got these, I had a very big set of awards I'd won as an amateur brewer in Australia, and to my surprise, they responded and said, yes, we'd love to have you. So from that day on, I moved back to New Zealand, and I was thrown right in the deep end and brewing 10,000 litres of beer each week from the day I started. And my engineering skills and background, fortunately, helped me with that. Otherwise, I think it could have been quite a challenge otherwise.
Absolutely. So what did you start? So when you went there, what was the idea behind the brewery? What did you start brewing?
Well, the guys that started the brewery, they decided that they wanted to compete against the major breweries. At that point in New Zealand, there were two major breweries, Lion Breweries and DBE Breweries, Dominion Breweries. And they had a share of the market in my home province. They were selling 30,000 litres of draft beer a week, which was being consumed in the local area. When we started brewing, I came up with some recipes, and we started brewing this beer, and we stole a third of the market share from the two major breweries in the first month of operation.
Wow.
So, needless to say, the two major breweries were very upset. DB didn't worry too much, but the Lion breweries, they were a little bit more than upset. So things got a bit nasty after that for a while, but it all worked out fine in the long run, and the brewery went on to great things.
Awesome.
With that, we're going to take a really quick break.
We'll be back with New Zealand Hop Talk.
That's right.
Alternatives to rice holes and much more.
Awesome.
For men about it.
In
1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here in the studio with our new great friend, Ben Middlemiss of Ben Middlemiss Brewing, which you can find more information about at benmiddlemissbrewing.co.nz. The NZ is because it's in New Zealand, and he's here from New Zealand. And speaking of New Zealand, well, we're doing all this whole show is about New Zealand and you in New Zealand. Mary's favorite hops are from New Zealand. She's kind of a New Zealand hop freak.
I haven't told you this yet, but it's true. So let's talk about the New Zealand hop scene. So, well, first of all, we have to preface this by saying that, so I met up with Chris and Ben after work today, and you guys had just come from Other Half. Mm-hmm. I met up with you guys in threes, and then we went to Derek the Norseman, Greenpoint Beer and Ale.
Mm-hmm. Well, we started at Greenpoint Beer Works.
That's true. But anyway, we saw New Zealand hops all along the way. But
we did.
It's kind of, what's your take on that?
Well, I'm excited because it's pretty weird because when I'm in New Zealand, there's a lot of the brewers there, the craft brewers, just absolutely love the American hops and the flavor because they like the West Coast style beers, you see. Those, you know, the Green Flash style beers and the Firestone Walker, etc. But it's very comforting to come out here and find that a lot of the American brewers really love the Kiwi hops.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, and why not? Because they are brilliant. They're fantastic hops. We've got all the fantastic piney and citrus flavors coming through. You know, it's nice to see them offset. The New Zealand style, New Zealand hops are quite different, of course, from what the flavors we get, that some of the tropical characters you get from the American hops. But I really, personally, I do use a large number of New Zealand hops in the beers I make because I, not only because I'm trying to support the industry, it's I just really like the characters that are present and I guess like to create some of those flavors which have a good reference back to our own industry.
So what are some of your favorite New Zealand hops and Zealand hops that are, you know, home brewers and commercial brewers here in America should look out for?
Well, Motueka is a very wonderful hop. Kohatu, Waiti, you know, there's Southern Cross, Pacific Gem, Pacific Jade, Green Bullet.
Green Bullet.
Yeah, and Pacifica. The list goes on and on. There's a very good array of New Zealand hops, and I can see that a lot of the brewers here are trying to get hold of them, and obviously having a little bit of difficulty, I guess.
Absolutely.
You know, demand and supply, the rest of it, you know, situation. But it's very good to see.
Yeah, I think a lot of home brewers. It's interesting because I feel like it's much it's definitely much easier as a home brewer to get hold of New Zealand hops. A lot of our local and also you know, internet-based kind of big homebrew shops in America get all of these New Zealand hops. So it's a lot of fun for homebrewers to experiment with here in America.
Yeah, I guess I get more chance to experiment because those 100 gram the 1 ounce packs are sold in here, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess they're easier to get. It's when you're in a commercial scale and using large quantities, then you've got to start thinking boxes of hops.
Yeah.
And then that
contracts
gets a little bit more involved. Yeah, contracts, yeah, and usage and the rest of it. And it's no different for us back in New Zealand. We have to We have to look at that situation and try and forecast what we're going to be using for the year. I'm really encouraged by seeing the guys using New Zealand hops here and tasting some wonderful examples of beers here made in this neck of the woods using New Zealand hops, and it's pretty exciting for me to get to try them.
So what's your favorite beer? So if you were a home brewer or even a pro brewer and that is taking advice from you, what would you say, what's your favorite way to use New Zealand hops? What kind of style?
I guess it'd have to be ales, particularly pale ales, because you can showcase the hop in a way that you're utilizing the flavor characteristics apart from the bittering, but you're getting wonderful aromatics out of a lot of the hops from New Zealand, and some people aren't using those qualities, I feel. The scope you've got with those hops to make beautiful dark beers, porters and stouts, and also with the likes of the Nelson Sauvin, etc., you can make some stunning ales as well as some beautiful pilsners.
Mm-hmm.
Have the nice aromatic and a nice sort of almost a slight fruit character coming through, which you can really find that the New Zealand hops are wonderful for that type of.
Yeah, and I think that's something we're seeing more of, or that I've been seeing more of, is we have this, India Pale Lager that people are making.
Yeah.
But also, I've had a single hopped, I was in California earlier this year, and I had a single hopped Motueka Pilsner, and it was delicious. And I think actually Chris at Dirk the Norseman, Greenpoint, also makes a single hopped Motueka lager. So I think lagers are really interesting because they showcase the hop in a very different way than an ale does.
Yes, they do. They do. They do. Some, some of the lagers I've tried here in the US particularly seem to have a little bit of harshness up front, and the pilsners and quite a bite, which is maybe not the best thing. But I've tried a couple in the last couple of days that have wonderful characters. So they let the malt come through a bit, and the dryness is there. But also you can get a more delicate taste, which you expect to find in a nice pilsner. And I've been pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
There are other interesting ingredients in New Zealand and that don't come in a box. And thinking outside of the box is something Ben Middlemiss does. What is the gorse? What is a gorse? And how did you use this very foreign thing to me?
Well, we were, unfortunately, in New Zealand, we were prone to have all sorts of horrible things introduced into the country from our forefathers immigrating from England, thinking that they would be fine to grow and live in New Zealand, but most of them weren't. And gorse was one of those things, and it's a horrible noxious plant in New Zealand now, but it was originally used as a thorny sort of a hedge to some cattle like to feed on it, but it was also quite a good stock control area. They could use it for natural sort of fencing. But when it came to New Zealand and they introduced it for the same purpose, it had no boundaries in a sense, and it just went crazy. It liked the climate and grew out of control and became a noxious weed with these horrible big prickles on it, which did do a lot of damage if you landed in there. However, the flowers that grow on the gorse plant are sort of a yellow, bright yellow flower in the middle of summer. You can smell them. They're quite a sweet scent, and they have a coconut type character. And very sweet, very nice to on the nose. And I knew that the English had made gorse flower wine years ago. And I decided to try making beer with gorse flowers. It gave a wonderful sweet nose with a sort of a coconut character, but was a bit unexpected to find a pepper character in the flavour too. So there's a little peppery note, but a lovely sort of a coconut note in the background. So used in the right way and during the process of brewing, it can be a wonderful part of brewing, but just haven't figured a way of picking them yet without ending up looking like a pincushion.
But yeah, that's, you use it two, and you did two additions, right? At the, you know, at the end of the boil and then, and
yeah,
then dry hop.
Yeah.
Yeah, very fun.
Yeah, and I mean, it's an interesting concept, but it's a way of maybe using a noxious weed, but that could be proved more difficult and expensive to actually, you know, to actually find a viable way of commercially harvesting those flowers.
But easy to do if you're a home brewer and using.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's easy to do that way. Yeah,
yeah.
Forage for gorse.
Absolutely.
And then I was also listening to you talk about how you couldn't get rice hulls in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So what did you use instead?
Oat husks. They're great. Oat husks are pretty cool. I mean, one of our parts of our heritage in New Zealand, because of the Scots immigrating to New Zealand, they love their porridge, or oatmeal as you call it here. And there's quite a lot of oats grown in New Zealand, and as a result of the processing of oats, there's to make the oatmeal or porridge, there's these husks which are left over, and they work just about as well, I'd say, as rice hulls. And so if you're making a very hard to make sort of a wheat beer and finding lautering or mashing very difficult, it's always good to put some of that in there with your mash to just to make things run off a bit better.
Yeah, I think it's cool always to find something, you know, local and there as an alternative to kind of what we all think about doing.
And you are a gypsy brewer currently, correct?
Indeed, yes.
So fill in the gap between when you were brewing, taking over the what was the name of the brewery?
The Marlborough Brewing Company. Marlborough. Is the company I came back to run, and yes. Marlborough is the province where my hometown is in the South Island. After I left there, I went on with partners to form a company called Steam Brewing Company. And we had one of my good friends came out to help launch some of the beers, and that was none other than Michael Jackson, the beer guru from England.
Yeah.
He's unfortunately not with us anymore. We produced some interesting beers there, and then I moved on to start setting up of breweries and troubleshooting for other breweries within Australia and New Zealand. And then later on, I had an association with the Shelton Brothers, because mm-hmm. Michael Jackson wanted some of my beer called Benediction, which I made at the time, back in the end of the 20th century.
Benediction?
Yes, nice. Benediction. It was a name, it was like a Paul McCartney thing. He dreamt the name yesterday. Mm-hmm. He woke up and he had that sort of in his brain. Well, it happened to me with Benediction, because I love Belgian Abbey style beers. I brewed this particular beer and couldn't think of a name for it, and I wake up in the morning after dreaming about it and had the name Benediction because of play on my name. Mm-hmm. And when we had the label, it had the two eyes and the word Benediction had little halos around the top of the upright instead of just a dot.
Yeah.
So it was a little tongue-in-cheek thing. He contacted me personally because Michael contacted me personally because he wanted beer sent out for his best beers of the millennium in the world. And I was very fortunate to be the only one chosen from the Southern Hemisphere to supply beer for this event.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I was completely blown away at the time. I must admit, initially, I didn't want to send beer because I thought it was going to some sort of tasting for the boys, which was going to prove a costly exercise to send the beer to the US. But when I realized what the event was, I sent the beer over at air freight at great expense. And then only to find that it got held up in customs because we couldn't get it in, that it had New Zealand labels on it and they weren't going to allow it to the event. So that's when Dan Shelton came to the rescue as an importer with his special proviso, and his import license allowed him to get the beer in. And so we became friends after that, and the rest is history, I guess.
Awesome. So tell us about the beer that you make now.
Oh, well, I make a few different styles of beer. I've got the beers we have here in America still at the moment. We've got Nota Bene, Belgian Abbey style beer, which was originally Benediction. Nota Bene has gone through, because of legalities back in New Zealand, we've now called it Nota Bene. And I produce a, the Nota Bene is an 8.7%. When I produce a lovely English style IPA at 8.8% called Hodgson, named after the famous brewer who helped pioneer the cause. And I make many other styles of beers, including Romanov Baltic Stout.
Nice.
Named after the last of the Tsars and the Russian dynasty. And I produce beers such as a harvest beer called, hop harvest beer called Sticky Cones, which has a lot of hops in there. My son came up with that concept.
Sticky
and
yeah.
My son Tim came up with that one. So we have some, I'm very eclectic in my taste in music and food and beer. So there's many styles I like to make, and I haven't stopped looking yet.
And you keep it fresh and fun. And you're actually, you've done a couple of collaborations while you've been in the States this time around, which is pretty fun.
Absolutely, yes. Well, I've been working with Hanson, the famous boy band over in Oklahoma in Tulsa. My first visit to Tulsa, I came out for the Hop Jam Festival a few weeks ago, and that was a lot of fun. We had so much fun, and those guys are really awesome, and they're so passionate about beer, and I'm just really encouraging to see that. And they have me involved. I've been making some beer alongside them. They're looking at different products, so I've helped them out there working on different product. And I will be going back to Tulsa in a few days' time to carry on that work. I've also, since I arrived in Washington, D.C., before I came to New York, I collaborated with Blue Jacket there. And Blue Jacket Brewery is something I've been watching since the day it opened. I saw it on the internet, and I just had to go there. I knew I was going to go there. And man, what an experience that was. It's such a brilliant concept, the whole building and the way the brewery set up. So I had so much fun brewing on different levels. I mean, you go up to the brew house, which is right up in the ceiling, and in this time of year in DC, as you know, it's pretty hot. And I'd say it was about 105 in the brew house. And
muggy, sticky.
Oh yeah, but yeah. The brewers were very impressed, because they said they've had other collab brewers come through, and they suspend the time at the bar. They get there, they sort of mash in, and they disappear for the day.
Yeah.
But I was determined, and I've never been any different. I saw that process through from the time we started to the time it went into the fermenter, the yeast pitching. I wanted to make sure everything was okay right through. So this is something I do, and they took great note of that. So I'm looking forward to getting back there and tasting it.
Yeah, we'll have to head down to DC.
We haven't been
to Blue Jacket yet.
It's a good New Zealand pale ale that's been made.
Awesome.
New Zealand style pale ale.
We definitely have to get down there.
Yeah.
So tell us more about the project that you're doing with Hanson Brothers.
Well, that's very interesting.
So they have the Hop beer, right?
Yeah, they've got the Hops beer. And I'm working on some other styles of beer that they're very interested in, and we've brewed some brews,
cool.
Trial batches, and I'm also looking at the moment, sort of putting some various quotes together at the moment from around the country, looking at setting them up a brewery in Tulsa so they can brew their own product.
That's great.
From scratch, yeah.
That's right.
It's very exciting for me, and It's so good to work with people like that. They're very down to earth and very good people to work with.
And it sounds like enthusiastic.
Oh, and very
enthusiastic.
That's
the thing. So much passion in craft brewing, right?
Well, yeah, there is. And I think I hit it off very well with these guys, because, I mean, they're great musos. They're great. They've got some great contacts. I've met some really interesting people since I've been in Tulsa. And I have an eclectic taste in music and a great interest in music, and I sort of followed it from my teens, and I just yeah, have so much fun seeing what they're doing and seeing their passion for music and seeing their passion for beer as well. It's
I say it often, but cool. I think there's a giant parallel between making music and making beer. And
I think so.
And that's a
there's
a,
harmonies involved,
yeah,
isn't
there? Absolutely. There's
sometimes harmony, it's science, five and, part know. Harmonies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. Collaboration is where the music happens.
Yes, exactly.
We're out of time on our show. Ben, I've so enjoyed our time together today, gallivanting around town, and I hope we get to do it again sometime. And I hope we get to make a beer together one day.
Yeah.
I would love that very much, guys. I'll just make sure it happens because I'm going to be back. I can't do the accent, but I'll be back.
Cheers. Fomentabad.
Oh, wait. Fomentabad
over here.
Cheers, guys.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Battle with no winners, war with no end.